there, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. This is a pre-record for while I'm in New York next week, which is this week when you're hearing it. It's a little more of Knights of the Rainbow Table. I've had a little online presence since the Gopher days. Just an ugly, mostly text vanity page with links to some stuff I'd made or done or admired. It ran a thin little web server that had all of 85 lines of code, and I kept it all religiously patched. Of course, I used a secure password for it, 256 pseudo-random characters that I kept stashed, along with all my other passwords, in a file that I kept on a thumb drive and on a remote server. The file itself was encrypted to the longest password I could remember, a mnemonic derived from a deck of shuffled cards that I'd memorized using a technique I found online and practiced for 2 months before I had it down cold. My 104-character password, one character for each suit and value, wasn't the sort of thing you'd expect anyone to break, which is why I felt okay about downloading the file over untrusted networks, even though someone might have sniffed it as it came down to me. But of course, I wasn't the only guy in the world with a cluster. Anyone and everyone could rent an unimaginable amount of compute time for rock-bottom prices these days, the result of Moore's Law and relentless competition. Cracking my little 104-character password was probably the easy part. The hard part, of course, would have been arranging to be on a network from which I downloaded my file. As it turned out, that part wasn't too hard. The denial of service attack on my site hit just as I was headed to Moskowski's office for our weekly meeting. It took me about 10 minutes to notice my mail server, on the same machine, wasn't working, and then, of course, I downloaded the password file. Whatever hacker or group of hackers or spook decided to get me, they knew their stuff. Must have cracked the law office's wireless password well in advance, and it wasn't like that part of San Francisco lacked for inconspicuous spots where you could sit with a laptop that was snaffling up all the wireless traffic and decrypting it. Having snagged my password file, it wouldn't have taken much to take it to pieces, and then the bad guys could get into my bank, could sign legal documents on my behalf, could read my online archives, could do anything and everything they wanted with my mail and my web server and whatever you want. That file was me, as far as the digital world was concerned, and it wasn't like there was much of a distinction between the real world and the digital one these days. I pieced this together after the headlines, naturally. The email dump came simultaneous with the first news story, and I'm pretty sure that The Reporter, an online site infamous for its grabby headlines, had done a deal to get first crack at the messages. But I couldn't prove anything. It's not like there was much that was that damning in the mail dump, of course. Tracy and I had traded some uncomplimentary emails about Tristan, but Tristan already knew he pissed us off all the time. And Tristan and I had been pretty crude in our discussion of the cluelessness of the security procedures at Moskowski's office, which was a ho-ho-ho the irony at Burns moment good for a million page views. Mostly, though, the public were interested in White Hat Hacker considered himself a Knight Crusader, and similar headlines, all the business where we'd hashed out the chivalric code. We had planned on downplaying the Knight stuff while making sure the judge knew that we were only trying to help. Tristan liked to use Renfair speak in his emails on the subject, which made for great comedy moments, and even a bunch of meme-y photos of Tristan walking the streets of San Francisco, holding up his e-reader, brow furrowed, and eyes nested in a hashwork of squint wrinkles. He'd already been a legendary San Francisco character, the e-book walker, they called him, and put him in the pantheon that included Emperor Norton and Frank Chu and all the other street nuts who made San Francisco great. The news that he was also a member of the Knights of the Rainbow Table made for great captioning opportunities. Forsooth, I doth be in thy network patching thine firmware. One thing I never did figure out, the person or people who pwned my web server replaced my homepage with a picture of me from my fat days with a bunch of crude fat jokes. Meanwhile, they pulled off a hack that put a page they controlled into about 10 million browsers over 24 hours. Couldn't they come up with anything more interesting to say to that many people? Hell, they could have just stuck some crappy ads on the page and made a couple $1,000s, assuming they had the noose to put together an untraceable bank account for the money to land in. But my nemesis or nemeses apparently had nothing more to say to the world, only that I'd once been a fat fuck. People are weird, their motives unknowable. This is a problem. I had to pay a couple $100 in hosting fees for all the traffic the hack generated, which was a kind of injury to insult moment. But given that I'd already borrowed an entire mortgage's worth of money from my parents for our defense, I hardly felt the additional debt. But the email dump and the ensuing bad feelings from Tracy and Tristan made my life appreciably worse. Even though we'd stopped being anything like pals years before we were busted, we'd been comrades at least. Now we could barely stand to be in the same room together. The email dump was a godsend to all the borderline personality types who assumed that anyone who tried to do something good must be broken or awful or crazy. People who already hated us with the white-hot heat of 1,000 suns pored over every line in a million emails stretching back to my high school days. I have never knowingly deleted a non-spam message, mining them for the most embarrassing nuggets they could find. Like I said, there was nothing damning, nothing criminal, nothing a judge would care about in there, but there was plenty that I never expected to have stuck in a tarball and torrented to a million bilious internet trolls to laugh at. But what got to Moskowski was that they leaked the fact that Nirat Patanasai had agreed to testify on our behalf. He kept that as his ace in the hole, had planned out a whole dramatic revelation that would maximize his effect on the jury. Now that plan was blown, and Moskowski swore that the DA would be riding Nirat Patanasai like a rodeo bull to get him to back out. "I thought you were Mr. Security Guy," he said finally, after a good 20-minute rant about all the various and sundry ways in which our case was totally, thoroughly hosed. "I am. So how the hell did this happen?" I shrugged. It happened because someone was determined enough to make it happen. Look, what we did was go around and look for stuff with obvious vulnerabilities that could be exploited at little or no cost, usually by automated attackers. But what happened to me, that was the work of someone really dedicated. What us Mr. Security guys call an advanced persistent threat. These used to be governments or major crime syndicates, but these days all it takes to be an APT is to have a really intense bug up your ass, some spare time, and the ability to use a search engine and follow a recipe. The gap between APTs and automated opportunistic attacks is narrowing. Give it a few years, and it'll cease to exist altogether. Moskowski looked at me with his basset hound stare, the litigator's zero-emotion poker face. "I'm pretty sure I understand what you just said, and it scares the shit out of me." I nodded. "Me too." "It's not like it was hard to predict, either. It's been on the way for years. Look, we built our cluster out of garbage, but Moore's Law means that by the time you've finished building your cluster out of free junk, you'll be able to buy the same amount of computation and factory packaging for about what your junk cluster cost." "So you saw this coming, huh?" "In a way," I said. "Hence all the chivalric code stuff." "But in another way, no," Tracy said. "None of us really wanted to confront what it meant if passwords stopped working." "Wait, what? Passwords stopped working?" Tracy and Tristan and I shared a look. It was hard to remember, sometimes, that we lived and breathed something that other people thought of as esoteric and bizarre. It was like being a pathologist who saw little life-shortening labels attached to every hazard, while others tripped blithely past them, shoveling poison into their mouths, endangering their lives with vehicles and sex and sports and recreational chemicals. For a moment, I had a sense of what Moskowski must be feeling, a vertiginous dropping away of the safe crust over his world, revealing the yawning pit below. "Not all of them. You can comfortably password protect your hard drive for quite some time, maybe forever, but anything that lives on a network, anything that can be analyzed and private without shutting down after too many bad password attempts, well, I think we can safely declare them dead." "But I don't understand. Which passwords are dead?" "Pretty much anything other people can access. Wireless networks, a lot of stuff you do on wired networks too. Any file that is out there in the wild world counting on a password to protect it." "Is that all?" he asked. I'm pretty sure he was being sarcastic. "Pretty much," I said. "I mean, give it a while. The future is here. It's just not evenly distributed, like the Prophet O'Reilly said." He was quoting Gibson, Tristan said. "Pedant," I said. Moskowski fisted at his tired, baggy eyes. "Just don't talk about this stuff in front of the judge, okay?" "Why not? I'd actually been thinking about how to frame it all. I mean, now that we were sure to be asked about the knights and the code, I wanted to make sure that everybody understood that beneath all the play-acting, there'd been a serious point that was going to affect them all. This apocalyptic talk, it's going to make you look like a nut." All three of us looked at each other, and then at our lawyer. "Which part was apocalyptic?" Tracy said. "The part about passwords becoming useless," he said, as though he thought that she was being sarcastic. "Hal," she said, "everybody knows that." "What do you mean, everybody? Our IT person still assigns passwords to our networks. She's not an idiot. So does she know this?" "Yes," Tracy said. "If she's not an idiot, she knows this." "So why does she bother?" "Well, because for now, it's enough to stop most automated attacks. And they're in a different threat category to your APTs. APTs, they're like ninjas who can pick any lock and sneak into any house. But there's not a lot of ninjas, and they're expensive, so you either have to piss off a ninja or someone rich enough to hire a ninja, otherwise you're okay. We pissed off a ninja, which is surprisingly easy to do, because setting out to become a ninja is a kind of mentally unbalanced undertaking." "Not like setting out to become a knight," I said, quietly. Tracy gave me the finger without dropping a syllable. "While automated attacks are like, well, like if the guy who smashed your car window and stole your GPS could do it again, in perfect stealth, from anywhere in the world, or if all the guys who might smash your car window and steal your stereo could reach you, all at once, it's worth defending against those guys." But give it another couple years, and those guys will be able to do most of the stuff a ninja can do, at least when it comes to passwords. They'll be able to replace expensive computers with cheap computers. They'll be able to replace cleverness with cheap computers. And there'll be a lot of cheap computers. So, give it a couple of years for the future to get evenly distributed, I said. And? And? What do we do then? How do we protect ourselves? Dude, if we knew that, we'd be billionaires, I said. No, you wouldn't, Tracy said. You'd be making someone else a billionaire. Some investor who bankrolled you and then ripped you off and kicked you out of your own company. No way, I said. I'd totally have a great lawyer to help me, like Hal here. Hal shook his head. She's right. You'd lose your shirt. Fine, it's not your fault. We're all going to hell in a handbasket. Security is dead, and the future isn't evenly distributed. Have I missed anything? Well, there's the fact that whoever snaffled up my password file could have been watching your web traffic and reading your email. That's why we kept nagging you to start using GPG. He groaned. I had a training session for it booked next week. Tracy patted his hand. It's okay. Everyone sucks at security.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, W-R-Y-N-E-C-K Studio, @gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time, self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.